Thank Lucien and Chris for inviting me here. I think it's really it's the first time being here, and it's a beautiful place. And I can appreciate maybe more than anybody else the importance of this place. Remarking on Lucien's opening, because I really did my PhD in foundations. And I essentially had no place whatsoever on Earth to find a place to do a postdoc. So fortunately, my advisor was in two places, so I could go from one place to another. and things changed now. I think if I would finish my PhD in time, a perimeter were existing, I think. At least I knew that there is one place to go to work on foundations. And what I want to present here is kind of a review talk with maybe two new editions, which in fact talk about things which started with, not started, and what developed a big part of it in my PhD at that time. Which I did under Yakira Aronov. And this two state vector formalism, in fact, after we did it, got some attention. And it took like 20 years, and now I think it gets much more attention than it got a few years after it was presented. So the plan is first to talk about the backward evolving quantum state. The two state vector, we have two states, one the usual one and one which is going backward in time. And I want to discuss from all kinds of points of view, what does it mean and is it different? What is the meaning of the backward evolving quantum states? Then I will discuss this ABL formalism. In fact, the beginning of the story was before my PhD at 64, Aronov, Bergman and Leibovich. Wrote a paper about time-symmetric quantum mechanics. And there is ABL formula, which using this you can answer and find all kinds of interesting quantum puzzles. And I will discuss at least about one of them in detail. Then I'll turn to weak measurement, which I think this is why there is a right for all this exercise. I think this is really kind of this is something very surprising and very universal and very useful, and this is what has been picked up recently by a relatively large number of works. And I hope I will have time for two editions, one kind of a story about counterfactual computation. There is a controversy about it with its interpretation, and it end up for me. I realized that example which I thought I knew completely, in fact, it has some new aspects which I found very surprising, and I will try to explain what they are, and maybe to spend a little time on things which changed, at least in my view, about many word interpretations, the one which I accept, and the two-state vector formalism. Thinking about this, I think, brings some new aspect about time in the many word interpretation. Okay, so let's start. The two-state vector. First, we have this time arrow made by memory. Our measurement, whatever, we have this thermodynamics, there is a time arrow. And then, at a particular time, we make a measurement. Standard formalism tells us that from T1, the time of measurement, we have a quantum state evolving backward in time. Two-state vector formalism tells us that if there is a measurement later at T2, that is essentially almost on the same footing, we can talk about backward evolving quantum state, which goes backward in time. And a quantum system at a time in between, we should describe by this two-state vectors, not just one. Now, the meaning is, at least I usually describe it, that we are somehow somewhere here, later. Both measurement T1 and T2 happened. And we won't describe the system, what was going on at that time. We don't know, maybe somebody made a measurement, we want to put bets on the measurement which were done in time t, at time t. And we have this information both about the result of measurement T1 and T2. We say that in this case, in fact, this everything is symmetric. We need two state vectors, one from future measurement relative to t and one from the past measurement. And what helped us to describe, to answer any question is this new concept, two state vectors. It has both psi and phi, no scalar product, which you just have to know both of them, one from the past and one from the future. So the first question is, are there equal, or if there are any differences? And in fact, mainly to explain this one, because you're all familiar with the forward evolving quantum state. And I want to present what means this backward evolving quantum state. And I want to answer if they are the same pictures. Can we say that it's really the same? And I will start maybe with some kind of, in fact, it's not a very simple experiment. The experiment which I'll discuss later will be even simpler. And two slit experiment, we send a photon. Oops. Yeah, this happened something. We send a photon and. Okay, now. All I wanted to show just this. We send a photon and there is a detector someplace here which found the photon. And we want to discuss what was in between. And two slit experiment says we all know that there is a forward evolving wave function, which I made some small animation of it, comes up to this moment. And I want to say that this is not the whole story. There is this backward evolving quantum state. I didn't try to make animation of it because there is not much sense in which, how to make it. It's backward in time. But so it's just here. If I put both of them and we look on this arrow of time, I can say what's the meaning. If I'm at particular time t, I just look here. At that time, the quantum system is described by both the forward evolving and backward evolving quantum state. So any question, if this particle had some influence on the environment or something else, or it was some measurement in between, I had to take both in account. Now, if nothing was there, no measurement, then it's just I can talk, I can make all kind of definition, doesn't make much sense. Quantum states, there are all kind of interpretations, but they will be nothing if we have no operational sense. And operational sense that we can use quantum states to make predictions. And the forward evolving quantum state, we can use to make predictions. In particular, in two slit experiments, we can see interference picture. So here, this forward evolving quantum state responsible for interference picture. This picture, how we can see it, one of the ways to see this picture is just to have this source and send many photons, many particles, and have a detector which goes and measures how many particles come here. And this graph will show really the intensity of the photon of this of our detector, how many photons it will get. So this is why everybody uses, even with meaning, without meaning, to wave forward evolving quantum state. But this is really the operational meaning of forward evolving quantum state. Now, I say that similar stories there is about backward evolving quantum state. I can give a meaning for this one. And I will do it in this way. Now, this time I have this source and it sends with constant rate particles. Of course, here, really, there is a constant rate. This picture is, I will get because I will count only particles which were found by this detector. If I will look, again, I want essentially in real measurement, I will find my picture essentially here. But the interpretation is about the particles which come out. I send particles from here, and I look only on pre-and post-selected. Only photons which were found later will be counted. And I will get the same picture. We have two slits, interference picture, forward in time and backward in time. So this was just to get some more feeling about what backward evolving quantum state. But I really want to discuss with some kind of ideal measurements. Usually I will consider this picture. This picture really assumes that there is a free Hamiltonian which is zero. I started this psi here and at the same size here. In real life, usually we will have non-zero Hamiltonian. And to get psi here, forward evolving quantum state at time t, we need projection on some other state. But nothing really, no essential change will happen in two-state vector formalism when the Hamiltonian is not zero. We'll just have to put evolution all the time, both for forward and backward evolving quantum state. So to discuss all these puzzles and properties, I will stick with the case when there are no measurements, no Hamiltonian. The free Hamiltonian is zero. And when there are measurements, quantum state changes. So an example, spin half particles, if I make this spin measurement, then the story, the forward evolving quantum state story about the particle is this one. Now, I want to mention that one can think backward in time and think about the time reversal of this wave function. And this is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about backward evolving quantum state, which originates in a future measurement. This backward evolving, the usual standard quantum state is different. It's described by the measurement in the past. So here it was sigma z1, so here is up z. But Bockwert won't tell us that it's really up x. But in fact, I say that the complete description we have to take at every moment both. If we want to describe our quantum system in any moment in between, we have to take both forward evolving quantum state and backward evolving quantum state. Okay, so let's return to the question. Are these concepts identical? Can I really introduce? Because this one is not, you will not find them in a textbook. And I want to put them, to put it in. So let's consider an example again, spin half particle, spin up. And there is a quantum state here which tells us it's spin up. And what does it mean? Again, what's important is operational meaning. The operational meaning that at time t, if we can bet that Stern-Gerlach will show, in z direction, will show probability up 1. It also tells us that the same story for backward evolving quantum state. If I know that this result, I know that if somebody measured spin here, he will find up z with certainty. In the forward evolving quantum state, we also know a little more. We know probability. We make many experiments. Many times we get this state. We get probability cosine squared theta over 2 for spin measurement in any other direction. Now, is it true for backward evolving quantum state? I will say that in general, it's better not to bet on this number. Why? Because if we'll bet with somebody on this, according to this cosine squared theta over 2, then somebody may prepare only spins which are all down. So we use this backward evolving quantum state. We want to say this number. But what will happen is we will never get up z here. And so there is kind of an asymmetry. Now, why is this a symmetry? Because what is usually going on, if where it's present, the past it's already exists, somebody knows it. The future we don't know, but the past exists. So the difference is that the future is unknown, but the past is known. So this, if we kind of naively consider these two cases, we shouldn't use the same operational meaning. We shouldn't bet, according to this backward evolving quantum state, about outcome of spin measurement at that time, given the information from the future. Now, however, we can erase the past. If we make the past unknown, then the claim that everything is symmetric. Let me show briefly how we erase the past. So the past before was like this. Somebody measured, somebody prepared spin down in the direction. A hint how to prepare, how to erase the past is an alternative preparation of this state. Alternative preparation of spin down is preparing an EPR and finding here that it's spin up. This gives us, again, spin down here. Now, this tell us how we can make this spin unknown. Instead of measuring here spin, we put guard that nobody will touch this particle from now on. Now, we know the future is unknown. So if nobody touched this particle and this is EPR, so we have unknown state here. So in this, if we, again, usually we discuss this in some later time. Consider a later time when somebody prepared a spin up Z here, and we ensure that after time T, nobody touched it. It tells us here nobody touched it. Similar situation, we know that it's up Z in the future relative to time T. And the past it's erased in this way. In this case, it's completely symmetric. We have the same, we will make the same bets on this particle and on this particle. So really, this shows that we can make a backward evolving quantum state completely symmetric from the point of view of predictions, what we can do with it. When its past is unknown, there is a complete symmetry. Now, the next question, when we have a forward evolving quantum state, we can manipulate it. And the question, can we do the same manipulation? Do we have the same power to manipulate the backward evolving quantum state? First, von Neumann measurement. Essentially, we were discussing this. Von Neumann measurement, ideal, textbook von Neumann, they're symmetric, the same story. Measure A here, here, the same story. Now, unitary transformation, the same. Schrödinger equation works the same way, forward, backward, evolving quantum state. And there is a question which I thought trivial, but it took me some time to really to prove it. There is a no cloning theorem about forward evolving quantum state. Do I know that there is no machine which can clone backward evolving quantum state? It's not immediately obvious. It's not exactly the same story. Because when we have cloner, this is the cloner to the future. This is the cloner to the past. When we make cloner to the future, what we can imagine to do, we have the state coming. We can make some measurement on it. After we know the result of measurement, we can do all kinds of manipulations. And then we try to create out of one object with psi, two objects with psi. And we know we cannot do this. There are many simple ways to prove it. Now, these ways to prove it do not work here because really there is a post-selection here. And the whole procedure is different. If I try to make symmetry to this, it is like if we would allow to make this transformation before the measurement. Because for this, what we do, we make measurement and then unitary transformation. In this picture, it's like if somebody will bring us a device which we don't have, you're allowed to make, to have a quantum system, to perform a measurement on this quantum system, and then you're allowed to make unitary transformation in the past on this system. So this is something which we don't have in standard quantum mechanics. So the fact that we cannot clone, cannot make normal cloning, does not necessarily tell us that we cannot make this cloning. However, we cannot do this cloning either. And the proof, in fact, it's going like historically, we came to the originally to normal no cloning theory. If cloner exists, the backward evolving cloner, then we can send signals to the past. Now again, everything causal from my point of view. If this, if I will show this, then the cloner does not exist. And here's a method how I can use cloner of the backward evolving quantum state for sending signals to the past. So I assume that at time t, there is a machine which always clones backward evolving quantum state. So I want to send signals from T2 to the past. If I want to send one signal, I measure sigma x. I cannot know if it will be up or down. I just measure it. I have no control what will be the outcome. If I want to send another signal, I measure sigma y. Since cloner, I assume that it exists, it always works. Backward evolving quantum state here at time t1 will be this one or this one, if it's up or down. Or if I measure sigma y, it will be up, up y or down, down y. This mixture is easily distinguishable. All what I have to do is just to make two measurements of sigma x. Here, they will certainly come out the same. Here, they might not come out the same. So few systems like this, and they send signals to the past. So in this way, I show just the proof is just to show how one can work with this backward evolving quantum state. So there is no difference about manipulation of a backward and forward quantum state for non-demolition measurement, unitary transformation, cloning theorem, and no difference about teleportation. It's the same procedure which teleports forward evolving quantum state, teleports backward evolving quantum state. That's the same, exactly the same stuff. Now, there is such a procedure like non-local measurements, which is instantaneous operation after which there is a record about non-local variables. Not all variables can be measured this way, but some can. Now, this procedure also works exactly the same way, backward and forward. This is like one Neumann measurement with entangled devices. So again, no difference. Somewhat to my surprise, I realized that all non-local variables can be measured provided you destroy the system, what's called demolition non-local measure. And to make them, in fact, I have to work very hard. I had to make a lot of entanglement and whatever to perform this. It turned out that I can do also non-local demolition measurements for backward evolving quantum state, but it turns out much easier. And so maybe it's interesting to see why it's coming easier. Because there is a possibility, now we are going a little more. Before I was just sort of thinking about only forward or only backward. Now let's try to mix them or go from one to another. It is very simple to go from backward evolving quantum state, to have a system with a given backward evolving quantum state. I can flip it and put forward in time. Flip it, if it's spin, it's just real flip. If it's another wave function, it will be complex conjugate. I cannot do this if I have forward evolving quantum state. All what I have to do to flip and put send the backward evolving quantum state to the future, all what I have to do, I just have to prepare an EPR for this particle. If I know that there is a backward evolving quantum state from here, prepare an EPR. From now on, this particle is really have the same property up to a flip. And this allows me to make this non-demolition measurement simpler. So it is not 100% identical, because again, what I use, our the devices which I have, I can make measurement now and then changes. So the standard thing is, the procedure which can do is not make some changes, but essentially we have almost the same property for both states. Okay. So let's consider the situation. We have pre-selection, post-selection, and we have this two-state vector which describes the system in between. Again, really, I would like to discuss it somewhat later when I know both results at T2 and T1. I always want to discuss a particular system. But when we go to a real laboratory and want to see operationally, it usually there is an ensemble. So just to make completely clear the game with pre- and post-selected system, let's see how I get this one pre- and post-selected system. I have a large ensemble, which I, on all of them I measure this projection measurement on psi, and later projection measurement on phi, if I want this psi phi two-state vector. Some of them come out right, I found it, some of them not. So I get out of this ensemble only two elements, which is pre- and post-selected ensemble. Again, there is a slight asymmetry between pre-selection and post-selection. Pre-selection, I can correct. If something is not exactly right with pre-selection, I can make unitary transformation because I will know, and will make it right. So this one, I can, if it originally it wasn't in my pre- and post-select ensemble, I can make it in. I cannot do anything like this about if I don't get this correct. If this is incorrect, I cannot correct. Okay, so this is operational meaning, but I want to discuss one pre- and post-selected system. I find that all these formalisms sits very well inside the many-word interpretation. Well, many-word interpretation is not really explained, but then this formalism goes together. And what it helps me, helps me for the following. All the time I was talking that I really have to go to T3. At time T, usually, if we have only forward evolving quantum state, the post-selection does not exist. I really shouldn't talk about this two-state vector. Many word interpretation allows me to talk, and in the end I will kind of argue that I have to. Allows me to talk about this final state. If I know that will be this projective measurement P phi, then I know that will be two words. There is this other word in which projection of phi will fail, and there is this word in which it will succeed. So even at time t, I know that in fact there are two words, and one of them, there is this two, the correct description is this two-state vector. In another two-state vector. In all words, the correct description at a particular time is a two-state vector. After I all discuss with this description, so what can I do with it? What we can say about the system described by this pre- and post-selection? Because I say that this is really complete, better than a previous description of a quantum system. So the first thing, I can predict outcomes of standard von Neumann measurements. And this is our Aronoff-Bergmann-Leibovitz formula, which gives us probability for a measurement in between given pre- and post-selection. So for example, if I have this spin, I prepare spin up and in z and spin up in x I find later, then in between I know that I will find up z for certainty, of course. Also, I know that I will find up sigma x equal 1 with certainty. Because otherwise it will be inconsistent with my post-selection. Now, I will not discuss it here, but one reason to kind of to why I say that this game is helpful. here I know sigma x and sigma z equal 1 with certainty. I ask you, try to make this game both sigma x, sigma z, and sigma y together. This doesn't look trivial. This, the two-state vector helps to find a solution to this puzzle. But the quantum puzzle I wanted to present here, it's really a different one, and is a three-cup game.
I mean, for intelligent guys like you, I mean, I can tell you, all you got to do, keep your eyes on the pebble, yeah? It can't go wrong. She is shy. Give her a chance, she will give you the slip. I don't know how I stay in business. And there it is, it's under that one. That, where is it now? Find her, and the crumbs are yours, the crumbs are yours. Which one is it under? That one. That one? Oh, no, bad luck again. Getting it one more go? Law of averages, I think you're going to win this time.
Tell us then, which one has the pebble?
Wow. Now, see, in all the excitement, I forgot myself. What would you just say to a game of...
Classically, to win this game effectively, you really have to cheat, as you see here. And maybe some people saw it on the streets. And using quantum mechanics, with some modification of a game, I can win with certainty. So this is my quantum puzzle, how to win this three-cup game with somewhat modified rules. So the neural is following. Instead of finding a ball, pebble there, really you win when you don't. This looks better because if there is only one, so you have smaller probability not to find one. But then there are some buts. The first but, you're really not allowed to look here. Only here or here. So it's 50%. And then there is a third but, the most serious one. So when you look where is the particle, I'm a quantum guy, I prepared it. I don't look at it. So there are some witnesses which see if you saw it or not. Then you carefully put it back. Then I return, and then I look. I am allowed to see, to make measurement, to see what's going on here. And if I'm not happy, sometimes I say, oh, no, I will not play with you. But of course, sometimes I do play. And it turned out that quantum mechanically I can sometimes play, and every time I play, I always win. And this is what's called the three-box paradox, because, in fact, we have here the following. Again, we prepare a ball here. You look here, you put it back, and then I make another measurement. And sometimes I say that I play. When I pre and post select, I say that I play when I find a particular state. Then I get really a particle described by a two-state vector. And this particle, which have this two-state vector, sometimes have this unusual property. When it's both here and here. If I prepare this state, A plus B plus C, forward evolving quantum state, it's really in three places simultaneously in some sense. And then I measure in the end that in A plus B minus C, also simultaneously in three places, but with a different phase. Now, somebody opened the box either A or B here in between. I don't know which. But what I know, that if you open A, it's always there. I use here the ABL formula. This example is very easy to make forward evolving quantum state to see how it happens. Now, there is a symmetry between A and B. This A plus B, A plus B. So, of course, the same is true also about B. So if I open A, I find it there. If I open B, I also find it there. Now, this is just a game. But we want to claim that in some sense, this ball both in A and B. And one thing, I can make an experiment with photons. I claim that if I make this pre-selection and post-selection, every photon will see two balls. If I send the photon to make scattering experiment on my ball, every time, what will happen? If I send a single photon, it will scatter as if I I put one here, one in A and one in B. There will be no difference whatsoever in the scattering picture if I have this pre and post selected single ball, or there is one ball here and one ball here. Now, what's more important maybe for me here is that if I look weakly, if I try to make weak measurement, I will also will find that there is one ball here and one ball here. Of course, if I make strong measurement, I find one here and I will not find another one here. But this destroys the whole story. I'm not allowed, I change both forward and backward evolving quantum state. The way to test what is going on to make weak coupling. Weak coupling on one system will not give me the whole answer. But large pre and post selected ensemble can tell me what's going on. And it will tell me that there is a particle here. This weak measurement will not be different whatsoever if there is a particle here or there is a pre and post selected ensemble. So let's go to this weak measurement, which is the largest surprise in the whole story. A von Neumann measuring procedure, you have a pointer, it starts originally at zero, you make a measurement of variable A or C, which has these different eigenvalues, and then you look in a pointer and you find which eigenvalue it is. Weak measurement, it's exactly the same story with one change. You are not allowed to disturb your system. So the coupling is weak. When the coupling is weak, you can do it. This is Hamiltonian. So the P, this conjugate to your pointer variable, should be small. It should be around zero. Then necessarily, your pointer is spread out. The same story, but the pointer cannot show just zero. We cannot do this because it's spread out. Expectation value of pointer around zero. The same interaction, the same shifts. Now, and if we look now on our pointer variable, again, it will be all over. If we make statistics, what we'll see, we will find expectation value. If we make a pre-selection and we make this weak measurement, it is a good measurement of expectation value. In fact, many real experiments are such because they cannot really be exactly precise. And this is how you find expectation value of a variable. So this is really a weak measurement, but without surprises because it was no post-selection. Let's see what's going on with post-selection. We start the same evolution. And then we make now the pointer is entangled with our system. Now we make post-selection on our system, and we get this pure state of a pointer. Its center will not be an expectation value. Its center will be in a new value, which we'll call weak value. And it's given by this simple formula. Let me maybe just show you again. It's always come out here. This is a range of the eigenvalues. It might be very far from them. So the formula is given here. And the claim is not just this weak measurement. It's a universal claim. If I have pre and post selected quantum system, it interacts with any other system will feel weak value. Provided the coupling is weak enough, it always will be shifted by a weak value. Yes? Exactly. There are some properties. Some classical type properties. A plus B weak is A weak plus B weak, but be careful, A B weak is not A weak B weak. Not exactly classical story. An example, like our example, we start with up X, end up with up Y. In between, we measure in this 45 degrees direction. it's this variable. It will spin in this direction. The sigma should be plus minus 1. Now the weak value come out square root of 2. This is kind of schematic measurement. If we make pre-selection, and we make this weak value with this Sturm-Gerlach, and then there is a strong, pre-selection was before. This is a weak coupling which put this weak value into z direction momentum of the particle. Then strong post-selection taking only states with up x. And when we look on the center, we'll see that it can move much to any value. In fact, it was found 20 times more than it should be. In principle, sigma x equals plus minus 1. And in this first experiment on weak values, they found amplification by 20. And just this year, finally, this amplification method did something really useful. There is a very tiny optical spin Hall effect, and it's cleared was by pre and post selection, amplified the shift by a 4 order of magnitudes, and then it was measured. And I realized that it would be another talk on weak measurement, so it's good that I stop here and let me go to another, I think, interesting story. Let's see how much time I have. 15 minutes. So I really, I don't know. People want to see this as a story, or people want to discuss. Okay. So let's, here I will try to run it. A counterfactual computation, or the strange thing, it's where is the particle? I send the photon and find it here, and I want to know where it was in between. If I make weak measurement, I will find it on this trajectory. And justification is following. If you send a forward evolving quantum state, this is really a wave function, forward evolving wave function. The backward evolving wave function is this one. If you look on both of them, here there is only one or another, only two both present. This is where we can find the particle. So this explains why the trajectory of a particle, where was the particle in this measurement, between two measurements, starting here and starting here, it was here. If I make a Max Zender interferometer experiment tuned such it always come here, we will find that it is, in fact, inside all over. So this smaller, this weak measurement will show that it is go inside, both here and here. One can interpret whatever way you want. And this Max Zender interferometer allowed us to answer another quantum puzzle, how to find infinitely sensitive explosive device which explodes on every touch. The purpose is to find it without exploding. And in fact, this Max Zender interferometer does it. Just put it in one arm of the interferometer, send a photon, and let's hope that we are lucky and we find it here. It was tuned in such a way that if the interferometer is empty, it's always come here. So if it comes here, we know that there is something here. Moreover, if we look on all this, we consider only cases when it's here, and we ask where was really the photon which was trying to look for this supermine, and we'll see that it goes around. It's never here. So we can tell, oh, it's really interaction-free measurement. The photon was never in the vicinity of our mine. Now, Josa used this idea to use counterfactual computation. You have a computer, it doesn't run, but you know the computation. His computer, the running of his computer is just photon goes through. It computes only one function, which might be 1 or 0. If it's 0, the photon comes through without any change whatsoever. If it's 1, it's absorbed. So this is the machine. He doesn't know if it's really 0 or 1, and he wants to know without really activating this machine, without sending a photon through. So he puts it here. And he sends a photon. And if you are lucky, that he knows that the outcome is 1, because otherwise we couldn't get it here. And the photon was not there. Now, unfortunately, you see, the same like mine. Unfortunately, if the outcome is 0, then after many times you persuaded that this is so, because it always comes there. But the photon do go through a computer. So it's counterfactual only for one outcome. And Joseph was sure that this is the maximum which can be done. And I was sure that this is maximum which can be done. Until experiment by Hosten and Kviat, which found a way to find all outcomes. Let's see how it goes. We have a source. We have this one Mach Zehnder interferometer tuned in such a way that if it's 0, it always comes here. If it's 1, of course, something comes here. This is not the whole story. They had another beam splitter, and they have another mirror and beam splitter. And if it's 1, they tune it in such a way that nothing can come here. This was the arrangement. Again, if it's 0, nothing go here. If it's 1, nothing go here. Then they send a photon, and it come here. If it come here, it means that it's 0, because 1, it couldn't come here. But if the photon started there and come here, then clearly it choose this way, road, because it couldn't go this way. No way. Couldn't reach this place if it goes through this inner interferometer. So the outcome is 0, and the computer was not running. And I saw that Kviat found another mistake in my work before he found this interaction-free measurement, what could it prove. I thought it's like 50%. He found it up to 100%. And took me some time to disagree. And the disagreement really is a story which I already showed you. If you look on this Kviat system, and you can look on these places and imagine that there are 3 boxes here. In fact, the photon come to all these 3 boxes from here, all kind of backward in time from here at the same time. Now, what comes from here, it's a state, superposition of particle in 3 boxes. And in fact, it's exactly the 3-box state, A plus B plus. And the post-selected thing, exactly the same, A plus B minus C. So what's going on here, it's a 3-box paradox. In 3-box paradox, I before said that it's in the same, in A and B on the same footing. In both in A and B. It is in, if we look there, we will find the photon with certainty. There is no difference, also there is a complete symmetry in quantum description between A and B. So he claims that it's just in A, and it's not in B. But this cannot be true. If you send a single photon, it will scatter as if there is a particle in A as in B. But this may be not relevant here, because this single photon makes strong coupling. If we make a weak measurement, we'll find one here and one here. This is relevant. The computer was running, because if we ask where is, if you try weakly to see where is the particle, it was there. If we look in our formalism, this is a forward evolving quantum state. You see, because of he constructed destructive interference, nothing there is here. This is a backward evolving quantum state. These are both together. Now, here there is only one, and here there is only one. Only here there are only all 2. So if we ask weakly where is the particle, it's inside the interferometer. And there is this very peculiar property which I never saw before. Okay, first, there is something very strange about the particle, and I'm not with Bohr because Bohr does not allow me to ask this question. And I'm not with Bohm because if I ask Bohm, he says that Kreot is correct. The forward, according to Bohm, the Bohmian trajectory is just here. But if I look on quantum mechanics, on the weak measurement which will test it, I will see that the particle did not enter the interferometer, nothing here, no trace whatsoever, no trace out, but it is inside the interferometer. Very few slides about when the world split. If we consider this simple experiment, and we talk about the world, my claim now is that the world, usually the standard picture is like this. We started with a particle here, and then we make a measurement here, and this split between two worlds, B or A. Now, I claim that the splitting was really before. Because if I look on this particle in between, this I show like neutrino wave function. It goes, it fills the particle all the way. So I cannot say that during this time it was nothing here. The particle was on this trajectory. So I say that if I want to explain how particles influence others, the quantum particles, I have to take into account this backward evolving quantum state. So the same story here, because I have to explain that why this weak coupling will show that the particle both here and here. Only my backward evolving quantum state can say so. So when I discuss words, I will say they're not split in the moment of measurement, but they split in the moment of future measurement. The many world picture is this standard one, splitting on every measurement. I will say that every measurement, the real splitting for a particular time influenced by this future measure. My conclusions. I claim that this is a complete description, two-state vector is a complete description of a pre- and post-selected quantum system. And both forward and backward evolving quantum state enter on equal footing. Any weak measurement fills this two-state vector. In fact, it fills weak values of all observables. If it couples to a system by some observables, what it fills this weak value and not anything else, the concept of the two-state vector formalism. People who are interested in many world picture, I think I have an argument that you have to slightly modify when the splitting occurs. And I want to add, if it wasn't clear during my talk, the two-state vector formalism is really standard quantum mechanics. I use it only in a standard way. However, this provides a framework for to try to look for modification. Aronoff really does not stop here. He believes, he plays with all kinds of ideas that maybe this backward evolving quantum state really exists now. And it can maybe explain, there are two options, two versions. One version explains some modification which we see in normal physics. Another version replaces collapse of the wave function. So there are things which one can do with this two-state vector formalism. But all what I did here, it's just standard quantum. Thank you.
So since we went, we didn't start until 5 minutes late. We have about 5 minutes for questions, and then we'll break for coffee. So sorry about that. And if we could sort of maybe take a couple of questions, but try not to do follow-ups.
Okay. Light, I might miss.
Lucian Ionescu, could you tell us what's the relation with Feynman-Wheeler theory and also with the transactional interpretation of quantum field theory, these two-state quantum mechanics. And doesn't it look like quantum field theory in disguise with time reverse, CPT, and all that?
Yes. Okay, this is quantum transactional interpretation. I was trying to understand. I couldn't understand exactly, so I couldn't say what's in and what's out. Field theory, I'm planning to go further. I don't see any reason why it all cannot be defined with fields. But I don't have any field theory. And I don't think the other is relevant. This is quantum mechanics.
So not the, say, standard quantum field theory Feynman diagrams, rather flows on of qubits on graphs. So it's like a discrete version of quantum field theory in disguise, because you allow, in some sense, to reverse time. And we're looking at qubits, and my, well, that's a statement so far, so stop.
Again, just I want to, my reason to work with this, because this allowed me to see new things. This weak phenomena, weak value, it's very simple formula. And to explain how it happens in forward evolving quantum state, it's extremely complicated a formalism of interference, which Berry call it super oscillation or something, which is get some new mathematics. And here you can just from ideas that when you make weak coupling, you don't change both quantum states. This is how we think. And then both should enter. And this gives us an intuition to see this effect.
Your interpretation of what's happening in between is different from Aharonov's in the sense that you don't want to think of that intermediate state as really existing. But yet, when you're doing the weak measurement, isn't that what you're looking for? It seems to me that if the weak measurement really does reveal what's going on in there, then you have to agree that something exists in there even before that final measurement is made.
Okay. There is this question about ontology, what is really is. And I kind of intend to think that what is really is a wave function. So there is a forward evolving wave function, this many word picture. And then Aronov trying to say that the ontology also has this backward evolving wave function. What I say is that if I don't see it, it should change some prediction, so I'm not completely with his approach. In which way I do say that these weak values are kind of real and whatever, because beyond the ontology, there is a question of our experience, reality, discussing even the world, how we explain what we see. And we frequently want to see what was there. We've made one measurement, another measurement. In between, there were all kind of coupling. We want to see what happened during all this time. And I think for describing this, the forward evolving wave function is not good enough. It cannot explain all this strange phenomena that somehow we see in this example, the particle both here and here. So it is not ontology from my point of view. It's just when I try to think about connection to our experience, and then I think use this language, formalism and language, to connect our mathematical theory with experience. I'm still happy with just one boundary condition going forward, and I have difficulty to tailor a special one so we can, if somebody will be able to, it's fine, but I was not able to tailor a good final wave function that will show what we see here and to get one word as Aronov wants.
It's
So as you know, people often consider more general evolutions than unitary evolution, evolution on density matrix and so on. And in that context, there's the distinction between the CP map and the more general positive map, where it's normally thought that you can implement this completely positive map and you cannot implement the more general ones. I thought that in your example, where you had things running backwards, you gave an example of implementing a complex conjugation, which would be like a positive map that wasn't completely positive. So is that right? Can you implement an arbitrary positive map? You know, that was your example of the flip. So can you now, in that sense, on the backward going wave function, implement an arbitrary positive map, not necessarily CP?
Again, in my picture, everything is completely unitary. When I describe this, it's just kind of a playing with the system.
No, but I mean, you can
I make measurements, and I can, when I make measurements, and I, in one branch, things become non-unitary. And I make conditional measurement, given this, I make this operation. For example, how I do a sweep, how I make the flip. I cannot, what I do, I make a Bell measurement on a system. This Bell measurement will come out maybe randomly in one of four outcomes, and then I make correction on one of them, depending on my outcome. So it's kind of, it's not, I have a measurement, I have an outcome, and they have a conditional unitary operation. But what I consider here, it's not really, I can consider all branches together and things will be unitary. In particular.
Yeah, no, I wasn't referring to that. I was just referring to the usual thing of doing a non-unitary map on an open system just by tracing out some other variables. And then you can only implement this completely positive maps and not general positive maps. So I was just wondering if you, in some sense, had something more general with your backward evolving wave function.
There is one more general, again, but I don't think I ever did. I think I more or less understand in which direction you work. One more general thing which I mentioned, I mentioned this puzzle, how to, with a spin half particle, which both sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z are well defined. And really, this I prepare what I call generalized two-state vector. Two-state vector, I have a psi from here and phi from here. Generalized two-state vector is really, I have superposition of them. Really, I don't say that there is such a thing like superposition of this thing. I have it in operational sense. I have an entangled system which prepared in a particular state. I have this system later measured in another particular state. I make guarding. Nobody touches this and seal it. Then effectively, this system is described not by this simple concept of psi phi two-state vector, but a generalized two-state vector, which is a general superposition. So this is one of the generalizations. Going to a density matrix and whatever, one might try, but I never did.